work.
The rich man goes to college, got the poor man go to work.
Give me 2 eggs, so tomorrow I got nothing.
I really believe that everybody should be born poor 1 week of their life, 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own bed, different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence.
You're listening to KZFR 90.1 FM, Chicaru, California, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. We also need to let you know the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. We got a couple things we could do on a pre-record, but I'm very, very pleased. You know, I said we were going to have some special guests, and it's a very special guest for me, someone I've known pretty much my entire 4.5 years in Chico, Bill Such, former executive director of the Jesus Centers here. Welcome to the show, Bill Such.
All right, I want everyone to know that actually, for some reason, Bill's mic was on live for the radio, so what you're hearing is not a full reproduction of how Bill sounded on the air, because the mic that Bill was on literally was not going to the recorder. So all the recordings of Bill Such went through my microphone. Sounds pretty good, but I just want to let folks know that this is not the live air interview as it goes to Bill Such. And enjoy.
Hey, thank you, Bill. It's always good to be with you and to talk about the issues of what we have in terms of homelessness in Chico. So I'm pleased to be here.
Bill Such, we're going to have a nice little interview with him. But I did want to say there was a really nice piece of news yesterday. I actually was green-lighted for a 30-minute weekly public access TV show on BCAC TV that will also be broadcast audio only right here on KZFR 90.1 FM, people-powered radio. And I'm going to actually play some clips from that. We had a really cool, we do Youth for Justice. We just started doing that every single Wednesday night. We expanded the morning program that you'll hear a little bit more about from James, one of our interns. But here's an open mic that we did yesterday evening, and here's three of the in-risk, at-risk. And I'm trying to get this term better known. In-risk is you're homeless, living under a bridge. That's not at-risk. You're in-risk. You need to be helped. So you'll enjoy this. This is Mark, Sonny, and James having some fun on open mic here on People Powered Radio.
I can show you the world. Shining, shimmering, splendid. Tell me, princess, now when did you last let your heart decide? I can open your eyes, take you wonder by wonder, over, sideways, and under, on a magic carpet ride. A whole new world, a new fantastic point of view. No one to tell us no, or where to go, or say we're only dreaming.
My brain is fucked, like I am confused. I feel like I'm just being used, like everyone just seems to find an excuse. But despite this abuse, I turn things into a boost. But I still don't know what the fuck I gonna do? It seems like everything's screwed. It's almost worse than cancer. This news is the answer. Be lying if I said that it ain't the truth, but I decided not to go deuces and do it, even though I probably already blew it, at least for a while. She feels like walking a mile with weights on my ankles. Life is the true thing that will get mangled. It's an infinite tangle. It seems to get stranger. The pain seems to get greater. Fewer people can cope with the anger, especially when it comes to danger. I'm just chilling in nature, burning honey dabs while y'all's smoking on resin slabs. I wanna take her somewhere far, but you know who you are. I can grab a dub and some sorcerer cigars. I wanna taste the sweet smoke of Cali Green, even sweeter taste of your kiss. It would be heavenly bliss. But for now, you're on my mind while I vape, because this is my escape.
Yeah.
Far over the misty mountains cold, to dungeons deep and caverns old, we must away at break of day to seek the pale enchanted gold. The dwarves of yore made mighty spells, while hammers fell like ringing bells in places deep where dark things sleep, in hollow halls beneath the fells, for ancient king and elvish lord.
All right, man, that was James. Actually wrote some really, really cool poems, poetry that he does, and it was really kind of cool. We had a lot of fun. We had an absolute blast last night. Youth for Justice, Youth Night, and I just big shout-out for the Peace and Justice Center and all the folks that have helped put that together. I'm going to transition to a piece, and then I'm going to turn it over and have a conversation with Bill Such around Julie gosh, I'm terrible with the French-Canadian names. Vigier? How do you pronounce it, Bill? Maybe you can bail me out.
You know, I don't know myself. I'm not sure how to spell the last name.
Vignant, I think it is. I think that's it. But, you know, I've reached out to her. I've had her on this show, and she was able to put a letter into the CNR, and she was covered on the news. And we just got some exciting things around that, because it just really... Anyway, it's a situation we need to do something about, and some folks are coming together in Chico to help Julie out. And here's a little back, a little bit of an update from Julie. I just recorded this today on the plaza on the Without a Roof radio program.
I'm here with my friend, a French Canadian, here on the plaza, Julie Vigeant. And she's got some really good news yesterday. She's going to be going down for a camping ticket. She's got her court appearance tomorrow. She's going to talk a little bit about some of the folks that have helped her with that camping ticket. Here you go, Julie.
I'm really grateful that Bill Such, the former executive director of the JC, he's such an effective advocate for the homeless. He's giving me a ride to court tomorrow, and he found a splendid cause attorney by the name of Ron Reed, who's going with me all the way on this to fight this ticket, this silliness that this ordinance has caused. And I'm looking forward to it. This whole situation, the whole silly situation being over with. I have better things to do.
So you were given a ticket literally sleeping on church property?
I was, mm-hmm. Back on July 10th.
I'm just glad you got some representation to help you. And you've recently got some storage, so you don't have all your stuff out here either. That must be a real blessing.
That's my thanks to Mike, my camp friend. We call it camp friend. Mike rented the 7th Street storage for me yesterday. He has quite a bit himself, and I got the wheelchair rig in safely, and there it be.
All right, Julie, any other thing you'd like folks to know about living here and living homeless as a woman that's been in her house her whole life and fallen on bad times? What could you tell people to kind of help them understand what's going on for you a little better?
I really don't know at this point. I've said so much, and the cause remains unchanged. It's a socioeconomic cause. We're not criminals. We simply need a safe place to sleep without police harassment.
All right, that was Julie Vigeant, just a beautiful young, I'm calling her a young woman. She's a year older than me. I consider myself still young, Bill Such. So I'm just going to turn the mic over to you. I know I've seen you in the plaza a lot, Bill, and you've done a lot of work in the plaza, and you're helping out Julie. So Just give the listeners what's on your heart, Bill Such.
Well, I didn't know that you'd recorded Julie today, and yet she's really a person who's in this prime position of the people who fall between the cracks, so to speak. In other words, this camping ordinance and so forth that came out late last year was what? Is a way to clean up Chico, whatever that means, in terms of the violence and the dissipation that goes on. And I understand that because we want to live in a community that's law-abiding and that allows us to do the things we want to do. What concerned me is the people who get caught in the cracks, so to speak. So that, for example, when this ordinance went up last September, October, I had people coming to me at the Jesus Center, and they were especially mentally ill people who were really didn't know too much about the ordinance, but were worried about where they were going to sleep, what they were going to do, how they're going to survive. And they were asking me my opinion on it, and I was caught in a difficult situation myself in respect to advocating for them. And at the same time, I was working with whatever communities that I could, with the police and different agencies in Chico, to basically just keep the organization that I was a part of moving. So since then, of course, I was dismissed from the Jesus Center, so I've sort of had to re-engage and look at myself in a different way in terms of what I'm to do. But I've always had a heart for this thing that I actually worked at for about 4 or 5 years, unsuccessfully, so to speak, which is to work with the Homeless Task Force and whatever agency or individual would work with us to try to find a place for a shelter for the people like Julie. In fact, the way that Julie mentioned it, basically, that's the idea that I got. I got the idea about 7 years ago when I was researching how New York dealt with the homeless people from the standpoint of people who were just trying to survive. And so what they did was they provided a place where there was a clean bed where you could go at night, and it was simply that. In other words, you had somewhere safe to sleep. So from that standpoint, I've just been looking for somewhere, someone, some organization to help us to find a place to do that. It's not worked out over 5 years. And so now at this point, I just think this is a sort of a good way in the sense of Julie and the other lady, Kathy, who were, 1:30 in the morning on a Sunday morning, they're trying to survive. Where were they sleeping? Well, I'm a Christian. In other words, Jesus was the person franchised with the edges of society. So here are two women who are trying to survive on the street. And what do? They sleep in a place. I think that there's a symbolic sense of irony in the sense that they go to a church and sleep in the grounds there, a holy place, so to speak, somewhere they'll be accepted, somewhere where they just find them, trying to find some sort of refuge where they can be safe at night. And they're roused. They're roused up and they're cited and given a ticket. Now, I know the police are caught in this in the sense that they have to do what the city council or local government tells them to do from that standpoint. I don't think they want to do this at all. In other words, they don't want to take women like this and give them tickets and so forth. But the women just got caught up in it. And so when I met them, it came to a point of, well, what are they going to do about this? Julie, she's got all this belongings that she has. She has no income. She's got two dogs. Yeah. She goes there. What does she do? She gets a fine for $100, $200. She can't pay that. Then she's got this on her back. Something needs to be done in respect to these people who are in this situation. And I'm hoping that what happens with Julie and Kathy tomorrow as we go to court, and as they're represented this time, instead of just, say, pleading guilty and just subversively just going through the whole motions of the system, that something may come about it. That's what my hope is. That's why I'm speaking to you in a way, because I think that they'll come out of this all right. I really believe that. But the wider context is what can we do to provide some sort of place for these people?
Yeah, Bill, I was really glad you mentioned that the police, they're caught in the middle of this. I think that was the exact term that you had used in that. You know, and I think it's heart-wrenching for them because they're literally telling people, Bill, that you need to be out of sight, otherwise we're going to ticket you. And, I mean, they're not doing that to be vicious, but it's just such a horrible cycle because if you're a woman living on the street, you don't want to be hiding and out of public eye because now you're in further danger. So I'm kind of with you, Bill. We need to get our stuff together. I actually had a little thing I was going to do off the internet about Yuba City actually is doing some tiny houses. Have you looked at that at all, or what they're doing down there in 14 Ford?
I've been out of the loop in respect to that.
Yeah.
Tiny houses and so on. I don't know how it's progressing here in Chico. I've just basically been seeking to, as a Christian, to minister to people in the plaza, in
Depot Park or wherever I can to help them to find a sustenance. I'm hoping amongst the churches, where the churches like Orchard Church can come out and provide the kind of resources that will help people to get into a place where they become, what you might say, productive.
Awesome. I'm doing a quick underwriter, and I'm going to come right back to Bill and, you know, get some final words on some stuff that he's doing here in Chico and what he'd like to see for folks falling through the cracks, man. And Julie's not a one-off. There's just a ton of people. We're going to hear from James. James is an 18-year-old kid. He's got no place to be. So I'm just glad you were able to come in, Bill. All right, we're back in the studio live with Bill Such. And Bill's going to take some time to tell us about one or two programs that he's working on.
Well, Bill, actually, when I look back, you have a situation where people on the street have lost all the resources that those of us who are able to survive either through what I'd call a middle-class orientation, which is that we're educated, we've got a good family, we're moving forward, we have ups and downs, or we go to university or we get a job and we see where we're going in the future. And for many people who have not had that as an upbringing or have fallen through the cracks, what happens? Well, addiction, poverty, bankruptcy, death of a spouse, all these things can come into play. And what would happen to us, say, in that situation, from my standpoint, would be that we'd have friends or family or church that would carry us through the next few weeks or months until we could become productive again. But if you're in a situation where that doesn't happen and you keep on falling through the cracks, and I'm thinking especially of people who are involved in drug addiction, what happens is that you end up on the street. And therefore, how are you going to get out of that situation you're in? Well, one of the situations I tried to provide at the Jesus Center was a program called One for One for One. The idea simply was that a group of people, it could be a church, it could be just a group of Rotary people or whoever, and they would agree to meet with a family or an individual and provide resources for them for a certain period. In other words, one group of people working for a particular time period, sometimes 1 year, with one person or with one family. And what that would involve, they would meet with that person or family once a week in a public place. They would help them with the resources in terms of providing a bicycle or a car. For example, in one situation with the Church of Our Divine Savior, they had people there who provided monies for a couple to find a on Honda Civic for $850, which they paid back once they got operational and then the wife got a job and so forth. Then what happens is they become productive because you have a group that's surrounding them that gives them the kind of support, whether it's emotional or psychological support or just basic support, to looking for a job, helping to dress or interview correctly and so forth. What it really is it's the kind of network of what most of us have when we go through hard times. We have friends, we have family, we have church, we have people around us where we can go to. So in this way, you work the other way around. In other words, you start in the street. And so that what I did was I got in a sense, an artificial framework of groups who would say, yes, we will commit ourselves to this one person and we will work with them. And so I want to encourage people, if you're listening to this, you're part of a Bible study group or you're part of a social group somewhere and you could help, you could get in touch with Bill and he could get in touch with me. And we could find a person or a family that's a homeless or living on the edge. We can provide the kind of support that will help them to get into that next level. Now, I want to tell you the reason that I do this. The reason that I do this is because for over 40 years, I've been a follower of Jesus. And the Jesus that I read about in the New Testament is one who was always ready to meet with, to help, to work with, to connect with people who are disenfranchised. In fact, it was a way that came through in the New Testament documents that he mixed with these people so often that the religious people around him used to think that he couldn't be a righteous person because of the kind of company that he kept, meeting with the prostitutes and the tax collectors and the people who are at the edges of society. And that's what struck me when I read about Jesus. And it gives me this incentive because just like in Palestine of Jesus' day, there was a purity map. And the purity map emanated from the temple, which was the holiest place, and then went outwards. And the people who were on the edges of society, who were not pure, By pure, I mean that they didn't fit into society. They had to stay there at the edges. So if you were a leper, for example, what you would do is you would have to stay away from people, obviously. And you would, when people came near you, you'd basically have to say that you were a leper, who you were. If you were a tax collector, somebody who had betrayed the Jewish people and was working under the pay for the Romans, or you were a prostitute, obviously you were at the edges of that society. And Jesus mixed with those people and brought something to them. He brought the love of God. He brought... I'll use a theological term. He brought the kingdom of God by actually eating with them. And eating with them was a form of saying, you are accepted by God where you are. And Jesus broke the purity map of that day. For example, one of the first things that he did, it's recorded in Mark's gospel, is that he went out and he touched a leper. Just that touching a leper means he's broken the purity principle. Now by that, if I can say... I'm thinking of purity on the basis of the codes that we use of people of like Mary Douglas, who's advocated this in the past, in respect to where does dirt belong? Well, dirt belongs in an unordered, chaotic way, some way away from the regimented order of your house. For example, one time I got up in the morning, had my breakfast, and I felt there was something strange about what I was doing. And then I discovered what it was. I discovered that in the middle of our dining room, our huge dog had dumped. I think that. And of course, as soon as I could smell the dump and at the same time see it, I knew nothing could be the same for me. In other words, I couldn't go and have my breakfast and then go about my day and so forth. What I had to do was to clear the the dump out of the carpet and to clean it. And that's the notion of what dirt is. In other words, it knows its place. It does not belong on the carpet in the living room. It belongs outside or whatever. So in this situation, what Jesus is dealing with is that the people who were ostracized, people on the outside, they existed then at the edges of society. And that was their place. That was their sort of purity code that existed. I think that what's happened with the city, with the city council, is that we've now got a purity code that says all these places in Chico are now ordered where if you... if you go downtown and you've got a home to go to, then you can go into a restaurant and you can go to the bathroom, you can use that bathroom in the restaurant because you're a viable, pure individual in respect to what you're doing here in Chico because you've got a place to be. If you're homeless, where are you going to defecate? Where are you going to go and urinate and so forth? In other words, you're ostracized from that standpoint. And this no camping, this ordinance, has done exactly that. And people like Julie are caught up in this. In other words, they're caught up in it because they're considered, not that they are, but they're considered to be the outlaying of society. In other words, we're not concerned about them and what they do. So I'm hoping that what happens is that through Julie and Kathy, through going to court, that it leads to a situation where we can find a place for these people because they're of value, just like we all are. In other words, my mantra to the city at the Jesus Center was always this: the way we treat people in our society, the way we treat the least of those among us, is some indication of the health of our society. I'm going to leave it on that. I'm going to say I encourage you in what you're doing. And if you want to be able to support in this program, One for One for One, which I'm still working on, you can contact me through Bill. Bill.
Yeah, without a roof, waroof@yahoo.com. And I think that's called the caste system nowadays, Bill. One thing I could add on to that One for One, I said on the last radio program I did, there's so many homeless folks, Bill, I've befriended, and I help them any way I can. When I see them, you know, either it's giving them food or giving them a little bit of money, or a guy that I mentioned on the radio program, there was someone helping him do SSI. She was out of town. So I had to bring him to his appointment. So I think there's a lot of different ways you can get engaged in this, Bill Such. So thanks so much, man. I can't wait for the update from Julie on the court appearance tomorrow. And thanks for coming on People Powered Radio, Bill Such.
All right. Bless you.
Bless you too, man. All right. We're going to transition here. Actually, I want to do this because I think Bill really touched upon a neat... he touched upon the whole idea of, you know, taking people out of this, you know, the more modern term, so to speak, as a caste system. But this is from the Public CEO. It's an article by David Liebler, and it's about Yuba City. Yuba City's actually started a tiny house village to move folks into housing and to keep them there and to connect them with services.
And what I thought was really cool, they actually had one of the supervisor, John Nicolte, said that in working with the homeless, county officials discovered, I can't believe this word discovered, that many were longtime Yuba County residents. Oh boy, they can't figure that out. There are people we have gone to school with, people our children have played with. It really opened our eyes. So I would go out and look for 14 Forward. It's a Facebook group, and that's really the organization that sprung up around this to give people a place to live and get off the street, you know, while they're getting their life together. But this is a really cool piece I'm going to do here. I went down to Sacramento, and there was a big rally on the state capitol to declare an emergency shelter crisis so homeless folks could get emergency housing money and shelter. And I just met into this wonderful, wonderful woman that's going to lead this off here, and it's about a 10-minute segment on this rally and Monday Night Mission that works directly with L.A. Skid Row indigenous folks that are just down and out. And it's a nice little contrast to the fact a lot of these people that don't really know the issue, as Bill Such and I do, they're, well, Chico's drawing all these people and we're the only people with a homeless problem. That couldn't be further from the truth. And I think you'll get a little bit of insight. Listen to Myra and Mel here from Monday Night Mission on People Powered Radio. All right, I'm here with a young lady that came all the way up from L.A., right, to be with this. And you actually do work with the Monday Night Mission. Tell us a little bit about the story and your trip up here.
So I have volunteered with Monday Night Mission. Maybe 3 years ago I started. And I found out about Mel through another friend. And Mel is just this really awesome guy who wants to do this out of his own, like, you know, goodwill. And from what I know, this all started because one day he was driving around LA and he got lost and he somehow ended up on Skid Row. And he saw that there were all these homeless people and he was just like, what's going on here? And he went to McDonald's and bought like a bunch of burgers and went back to Skid Row and handed some of them out. But obviously he didn't have enough for everybody. So some people were like, hey, like, what about us? And that just kind of like, I guess, triggered something in him. And that's how he began Monday Night Mission. And the reason why it has that name is because he used to only do it on Mondays. But now he does it Monday through Friday every night.
What's your experience going down there and helping people on Skid Row?
Amazing. It's hard to describe because it's something I've never experienced before. The first time I went there, I remember some of the people that I saw, I just couldn't believe that they were actually living on Skid Row. They look like just you and me, you know, they look like normal people. And a lot of people that live on Skid Row actually have jobs and, you know, are doing something. They just don't make enough to afford a living. But it's definitely a very rewarding experience and I would recommend it to everybody.
One thing we could do right here, right now to help people in LA, Skid Row, what would it be?
Just by being here, I think today, everybody, such a big gathering definitely makes an impact. And it's everybody recognizing that this is a problem. So the fact that people were willing to drive all the way from LA, and especially in this heat, and being up here, it says a lot. And I really hope that, you know, whoever sees this and finds out about this, that they realize what a big problem this is.
All right. It's my distinct pleasure, Guillermo Mash, here for the Without a Roof radio program for August of 2016. And it's my pleasure to do a follow-up interview with Mel Tillakarapna out of L.A. He runs a nonprofit called Monday Night Mission, and he's going to do a quick introduction for himself and our listeners here on KZFR 90.1 FM.
Well, my name is Mel Tillakarapna, and I've been running Monday Night Mission for the past 5.5 years. Pretty simple operation. We go to Skid Row 5 nights a week, every week out of the year, serve around 200 to 300 people. Since of late, we've been heavily involved in advocating for issues pertaining to people experiencing homelessness.
I thought Myra did a nice job, that the one interview I was able to get at the Crocker Park before I went over to State Capitol. But she really did a nice job kind of humanizing the situation on Skid Row where you do all your work, Mel. Why don't you give our listeners a little understanding of the situation on Skid Row in Los Angeles?
Well, you know, I mean, to be honest with you, Guillermo, I like to call Skid Row hell. Skid Row is this small area. It used to be 50 blocks. Now it's condensed into more, condensed into a much shorter space of area where they have a huge concentration of shelters and support services for people experiencing homelessness. And since this Skid Row has existed for a long time, I'm talking over 100 years, people have been accustomed to going down there for help, thinking that there was help. And also, unfortunately, there's been this long history of people being dumped on Skid Row, people suffering from regular physical ailments, to a lot of people who suffer from mental health issues who've been dumped on Skid Row. So right now you see this huge concentration of people suffering from everything from mental illnesses, physical illnesses, to substance abuse issues. It's this unbelievable sight for LA where you go and you see tent after tent after tent, and if it's not a tent, in between the tents you get people sleeping on the street. There's piss on the ground, it smells horrendous, and it just gives you this idea of, you know, what a total failure the system the U.S. has for helping the homeless.
Yeah, helping poverty in general, because it must get really, having a hard time coming up with a word, but it must be really disheartening to be doing this work for as long as you have, Mel.
5.5 years since I started this. I actually wasn't involved in any poverty-related issues before this. It is disheartening in the sense, Guillermo, I mean, you know, California is the sixth richest economy in the world, and I'm talking about us, our economy being more powerful than hundreds of countries out there. And with all these resources, we've got in the city of L.A., on official count, 26,000 people who have nowhere to go but a little tent if they're lucky. And even at that point, they have to fight for a small piece of sidewalk. You learn to understand that people go through grief. People suffer. But when you see that suffering on Skid Row and know that help is very possible, that a solution to all of it is very possible, but elected officials are lacking in the compassion to do so, is the most disheartening thing.
Yeah, I kind of put it under a phrase, a common term: hungry, angrily, lonely, tired. And I'm sure you see that constantly. Is it safe to say then, Mal, that you think things are worse since you started doing this, or maybe kind of compare?
Absolutely. Things are worse in multiple ways, Guillermo. First, we do see a lot more people on Skid Row. And when I say people, right now we're getting a ton of families who are being consistently turned away from shelters because there's no space. So you get single moms, single dads, people with young kids who can't get into a shelter who have to sleep in a tent. So it's getting worse in that way, and what's even more frightening is the fact with, how you touched on how our system fails poverty. There's really no affordable housing being built, so we're on that precipice where this could get tremendously worse because there's so many people on the brink of becoming homeless.
Yeah, are that you don't see. They're sleeping in their cars, or they're double tripled up in small rooms with other people that are experiencing poverty. I mean, it's really it's kind of a parrot in the mind, you know. On our previous interview, I think that we had talked about some referendums or initiatives on the ballots in November that might get some money for affordable housing. Did I remember that right?
Yes, correct. But unfortunately, thanks to elected officials, most of those are out. The $1.2 billion bond is still en route to being on the November ballot. The problem with the $1.2 billion bond is the way a bond works, that money was only set up to be used towards building permanent supportive housing. Permanent supportive housing is much needed, but if you're going to put a person in a home but not give them the physical and the mental health care they need, the help they need to get out of substance abuse, they're not going to stay there, or they can't stay there.
So $1.2 billion would be used to build supportive housing, Mel, to La Corrupna?
But the problem is, Guillermo, they were coming up with a supplemental tax to support to fund supportive services, but both of those funds were taken out. Our county board supervisors failed at it miserably. First was a sales tax increase, and I know people balk at the first mention of a tax increase, but this would have only cost Angelenos $1 each month, but still would have generated $350 million a year towards supportive services. So that's out. And same as that, they were thinking of a marijuana tax, and last week county board supervisor Sheila Cool rescinded that tax as well.
Well, that's really unfortunate, because I would agree with your assessment that Mel Tillich-Karapner, for listeners just joining, this is Mel Tillich-Karapner on the line from Monday Night Mission in Los Angeles. I would agree, Mel, in your assessment that a lot of those folks on Skid Row have really kind of quote-unquote hit the proverbial end of the net and fallen to the ground. But there's just such a dire lack of affordable housing anyway, that just build $1.2 billion in housing and put folks in there that might not have, that don't have substance abuse issues and mental health issues. But I think for the listeners here in L.A., that might be listening in, or here in Chico, without the supportive services, you're not really tackling the visible homelessness, the folks that just can't get themselves up on their feet. What would you say to that, Mel?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that are really lacking is the fact that we don't have any services available for people who are looking to get sober. Right now, there's on average a 3 to 4 week wait for people who are looking to get sober. And it's telling a person who decided to quit alcohol, hey, come back in 3-4 weeks. But the problem being for most people who have issues, long-term issues with alcohol or any other drug, they can't just quit cold turkey. They need help, medical help, care to make sure their body doesn't, you know, go into withdrawal and all and other issues. So there's very little hope at the end of the tunnel right now. And I disagree on your choice of words of saying unfortunate. It's unfortunate when a person is diagnosed with cancer. But when these tax initiatives were failed by elected officials because of incompetency, that's not being unfortunate. That's just our elected officials being incompetent.
Well, thank you, Mel. I would agree with that. I didn't use strong enough a word, so I appreciate you putting the strong word to that. Recently, like you had said in your intro, you've been focusing more on the criminalization and getting the services for folks because we don't see things getting better, only worse in Skid Row. And you did this rally of love to Sacramento. So why don't you just tell our listeners a little thumbnail on what that rally was all about and give us a recap on how it went.
So the whole rally was to spread awareness. Well, first of all, to spread awareness that, you know, we have a situation that's spiraling out of control. And the second and the other main goal was to pressure Jerry Brown into declaring a state of emergency on homelessness. We left on Saturday morning. We had around 90 of our volunteers from both groups and a couple other people participating who drove 385 miles all the way to Sacramento to the Capitol building to hold a protest. It was an amazing protest to get 90 people, especially since the destination was 385 miles away. We're still working on the campaign to get the word out there. It's not just the protest that we held on Saturday. It's using it to keep on spreading awareness as to why we did that. So it's just still spreading the message to everyone, you know, specifically the people who went through spreading message and saying, hey, we really have a crisis and the time to act is now. And the reason we say we need emergency declaration is unless we respond to it as a crisis situation, we'll never get a handle on it. And right now we are running out of that window where we can come to a point, homelessness is coming to a close, and it's coming to a point that will always be containment in LA and California.
So how do you think it was received, Mel, within your folks from Monday Night Mission and the other group that was involved was LA on Cloud 9? How was it received by those folks and other folks that may have been part of the rally and protest?
I think for a lot of people, it was very inspirational. I mean, even to myself, to see so many people willing to drive up. And I mean, I talked to people, a lot of our volunteers yesterday, and they had got home at like 6 in the morning. And all these guys left knowing that it was going to be this crazy drive. And, you noticed that 113-degree weather up in Sacramento. People still left, and, you know, it's inspiring a lot of people, and we want to continue to push the message out there and use events like this to keep putting the focus on how bad the situation is.
So have you had any responses or follow-ups from elected officials or press since the rally on Saturday?
We had a good response from a couple of media stations. We're getting response from elected officials, but it's a matter of meeting them within this week and next week, and once, you know, that comes to a point where we do meet them, then we can basically talk, you know, see what the status quo is from there.
Do you think there's anything you'd do differently, Mel, having gone through this massive logistics experience of driving everyone on a caravan up to L.A. to do a rally on the Capitol and driving back? Any things you learned that you might do differently or you might want to repeat and do it a little stronger the next time?
Absolutely. I mean, the problem is, Guillermo, I mean, it's the situation we have is not a situation that's going to take one bill to pass and have a result. Homelessness is going to take on the best case scenario, 10 years to solve. So as long as we come to it, we need to find niche ways to get more awareness to it. So it might not be going back to Sacramento again, but it will be putting up events so that we keep people's focus. One of the things that we're really worried about is that, you know, people are very excited, but come the November election and whoever gets elected, people will be like, oh, okay, this person was elected, we are good. we need to have our people focused, because at the end of the day, it's not a president who's going to bring about the solutions for Los Angeles. They actually can't. It has to be our local population working with our local elected officials and pushing them to come up with a local solution to it. California accounts for 21% of the U.S. homeless population. This is a problem we face. This is a problem we need to come up with solutions for. So it has to be a homegrown solution. And for that to happen, we need people to be focused beyond November. So until we, you know, get to that conclusion, we need to keep spreading awareness in whichever way we can that captures everybody's attention.
I would add another word to the conversation that's that the word I'm not going to add is frustrated, but I'm going to say I'm frustrated because we're at such a disadvantage, Mel. If you look on the quote-unquote the side of criminalization and, you know, business improvement districts and Chamber of Commerce, they are very well organized. They're organized regionally. They're organized statewide. So isn't the police. So isn't fire. It's just kind of a daunting task organization-wise, and I've always been a little frustrated that it's hard to kind of get that synergy amongst the different organizations to just kind of pull off, you know, something really big, like, you know, converging on the state capitol and having 1,000 people. Because the reality is the more people you gather in one spot, or more that you can quote unquote get show that organizational strength, you're bringing awareness to it in a much bigger way. What would you say to that, Mel?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we need the broad support of everyone involved. And I think it's coming more sooner than you think, Guillermo, because, you know, we're at that point where everybody's starting to notice homelessness being everywhere. So it's coming to that point, but until we come to that point, until we get to the point where everybody's frustrated, we need to keep hitting that nail on the head until we get to that point. We need to try harder the next time until we come to the point where everybody in California is like, okay, Jerry Brown, either you fix this or get out.
One of my advocates that came with me, Bob Trouch, ACLU, a longtime advocate for civil human rights. He had just a wonderful way of talking about some things on the way down that related to the rally you did. And it's kind of like, you know, we have a responsibility to do this. In a way, when I interviewed you on the phone, Mel, it was a responsibility to me. I'm like, I need to be there because we need to show some organization and some strength around this. So I just really thank Monday Night Mission, all the folks from Sacramento. I saw 4 or 5 folks that I know from the Sacramento area and LA on Cloud 9. Anyone else we should thank, or kind of a wrap up, or something you wanted to share with our listeners that maybe we haven't touched upon?
Just to everyone, LA on Cloud 9, Claudia from LA on Cloud 9, who unfortunately couldn't be here. A huge heart from everybody on their team being willing to come up there on such short notice. Everybody who drove, everybody who stayed in those cars in that heat, I mean, it was a tremendous amount of heart that took to do it, accomplish something this fast and this, you know, tremendous. And, you know, like I mentioned on one of my posts yesterday, the amazing thing about all the people who contributed to this, who came out to Sacramento, is the fact that these guys do it every week. And that's the amazing thing. These guys do it week after week after week, and they still are coming back. I still all had our regular Monday volunteers turn up yesterday. So there are the people working hard for it. We are not alone, and we're going to get there.
You certainly are, Mel. It's Stila Karupna from Monday Night Mission. It's just a pleasure to talk to you again, and I think I'll hear from you again. I'm sure we'll, you know, our paths will cross, and maybe at that point we'll have some money and some will, and maybe new elected officials that want to get behind the dime instead of hiding under the curb.
Absolutely.
Without a Roof radio program here on KZFR, People Powered Radio. It's made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the art stores in Chico, Oroville, and Paradise. Putting your green philosophy towards a worthy cause. The art stores offer gently used clothing, furniture, antique collectibles, and more. All proceeds support local people and families with developmental disabilities. Open 7 days a week at 2020 Park Avenue in Chico, 2745 Oro Dam Boulevard in Oroville, and in Paradise at 6640 Clock Road. More information at arcstore.org. And by the law firms of Peters, Habib, McKenna, and Jewel Rose LLP, specializing in civil litigation with an emphasis in personal injury and real property litigation. Serving the community since 1896, the law firm of Peters, Habib, McKenna, and Jewel Rhodes, LLP, is located at 414 Salem Street in downtown Chico, and their telephone is 530-342-3593.
All right, after this program, stay tuned for Beatle Nation, one of my favorite shows, man. Youth coming in here playing Beatles music, you know. You can't get much better than that. And I did want to have a chance to play this this little clip because there's a local news story that Bike and Bill, peddling for affordable housing, stopped in Chico this week. And they stopped at Habitat for Humanity. I think they stopped at the Restore. But I had a beautiful interview, Without a Roof. We did an interview with Liz Urbanowitz, who is actually doing that tour. She's on a different leg. I think it's three or four legs. She's going to end up in Southern Cal. But this gives a really good thumbnail on affordable housing and the issues that we face all across the United States. And listen up for Liz Urbanowitz here on People Powered Radio.
Hi, so I'm Lizzie Urbanowitz. I'm 19 years old from Chico. I'm currently studying at UCLA, and this summer I'm going to be biking from Portland, Maine to Santa Barbara, California. I'm biking to raise money and awareness for affordable housing issues across the country. It's going to be almost a 4,000-mile trip. Hey, Bill, let's move to a place I played in a lot as a kid, Cape Breakers.
Let's do it. So tell us a little bit about last year at the AmeriCorps and Habitat for Humanity and how that ties in.
Last year I spent 10 months serving with Habitat for Humanity, and one of my favorite projects was working for AmeriCorps, and one of my favorite projects was working with Habitat for Humanity of San Antonio. Here's where I learned basics of construction, and I really got interested in affordable housing issues. I also learned what Bike and Build was, because I never heard of Bike and Build. And it really is something I'd like to do. I've always loved biking, and I've always wanted to go on a long biking trip, but I was never going to do it unless there was really a good reason or a cause behind it, and this is kind of exactly that. I'm biking and going on a cool adventure, but I'm doing it for a reason, which is to raise awareness and money for the affordable housing cause.
Mm-hmm. So what's this going to look like? 4,000-mile bike ride? Give us a little thumbnail on the bike ride.
Yeah, so I'm starting June 17 up in Portland, Maine, and I'm going to be biking all the way to Santa Barbara, where we'll end up September 1st. I'm going to be with about 20 or 30 other people, and we're going to be riding about 70 miles a day, and along the way we make different stops and do build days with organizations like Habitat along the way. And the money we raise now to go on the trip is going to be going to these organizations that are affiliated with affordable housing issues, and we get to decide where that money gets to go, which is really cool.
So you're going to be hammering some nails?
Absolutely. I love construction, so I'll be using power tools.
How can people follow you and get involved with your progress and, you know, getting the money and the funds you need?
Yeah, so there's a link to my bio right below, and at the bottom you can donate funds for my trip. And that money goes to these nonprofits that are affiliated with affordable housing issues. So it's really a cool thing. So you can donate below and follow me on my summer adventure.
Thank you so much, Liz.
Thank you.
And hey, thanks, Liz Abranos, for representing Chico so well on the Bike and Build. Just want to do a quick update. I did this out on our social media this week. There is, let me just read this out, because there literally was this article that was done through Action News Now. It was titled "Scammers Could Be Targeting Good Samaritans," and as sometimes news media tends to do, they kind of dovetail that into, you know, issues that are in people's hearts and minds. But they had some, they took some liberties, as far as I can see, that Lori Kunsona, executive director of the Jesus Center, they'd ask her a question about panhandling. And she answered that, and then they aired the program. But little did Lori Kunsta know that the actual post on the internet had verbiage in there that wasn't on the broadcast that basically said, "The advice extends to even handling out food to beggars on the street." So the follow on this is basically saying, the Jesus Center is saying, don't help people that are hungry on the streets. I won't even read that to you. You know, I told Lori in an email, I said, half a dozen people I talked to about this were angry to live it, and I was one of them. But she did say that she wants to clarify, and then she's going to reach out to the lady that did the article And because that's not what I said, because it isn't what she believes. And we're trying to work out an interview. I want to try to get the Jesus Center in here and do an interview on the next Peace and Social Justice show I'm doing next Friday. And to talk about the Jesus Center, what they're doing, and a little bit around, you know, this specific, you know, how can we help people in the community, kind of carrying on from the conversation that Bill Such had. But I do want to have time enough to get this done, because this is a wonderful interview with Jay, one of these folks that literally does not want to be on the street, just graduated high school, hello, kicked out of his house. Here on People Powered Radio.
Guillermo Mash here for the August 2016 Without a Roof program. It's my real distinct pleasure. I've gotten to know this young man that we're going to be talking with here a little bit. Street name Jay, but he's been doing some internship here with Youth for Justice on Wednesday mornings. And he's going to tell us a little bit about his situation and how he's been out here on the street a month or so, living homeless in Chico, man.
I just want to personally know, I've been technically kind of homeless for a month, but not on the streets. I've been crashing at friends and family. I've just been homeless since a couple of weeks ago. I'm fresh out of high school. I had to leave for a program down in Sacramento. I'm kind of having a little problems with that right now. So I'm on the streets looking for temporary work, just doing what I can to get by. But a lot of things that have happened haven't really been going towards my way, but it's just things happen. That's what I've been living by right for the past couple of weeks. Pretty much, I had to leave to get a taste of the real world, as some people would say it, but I'm still getting help from them.
So you've been out on the street for a month. Why don't we kind of do the good of being on the street, and not that there's any good to it, but what kind of things have you encountered that have been real helpful for you out here on the street, Jay?
Well, last week, I was assaulted and had some stuff taken from me, but I learned that day that, yeah, it happens, but you know what? Things come and go. Some of the things that they took from me, I can replace. Some of it, not really in a sentimental value, but I can get those replaced. I can talk to my family again, and probably get some from them again, but that actually helped me with realizing that despite what people say about being on the streets, it's not as easy as it sounds. I was attacked around 4 a.m. in the morning, and I was half asleep. And that's just one thing. Another thing is, there are a lot of different places out there that you can go. It's not necessarily you can't go, it's just your choice. There is no possibility of saying you can't go. I mean, you can go, you might get turned away, but at least you can get information about it. That's what I did one of the first days I was on the streets. I went to a shelter, and I was told they don't accept new people between a certain time. So I came back the next day, in that time frame, and I got set up. Just haven't gone back due to certain issues. They had, and as far as I know, still a bed bug problem. I had stuff stolen, and the food did not sit well with me in the sense that I was getting sick off of it.
How was the dorm setting? I know that's really hard on a lot of people. Was it hard on you, or what was that situation like?
For some people, it would have been hard because of the lack of privacy, but from what I know about the male dorms, it's just a big room with 30 to 40, 45 bunk beds, and there's chargers everywhere, but it's just, there's no real privacy. You have to go down to the bathroom down the hall to get any sort of form of privacy, but that bathroom's a communal bathroom for men. And the dorms, it's kind of hard to sleep sometimes, especially if you're used to having a bit of privacy. Me, I'm used to having to sleep in places with other people. That part didn't get me. It's the part of where's my stuff, and like I said before, the bed bugs. I move around, making sure I can get situated in a different spot, make sure I'm still moving.
How helpful has Sixth Street Center for Youth been here in downtown Chico?
Sixth Street has actually helped me a lot. When I went down there the first time, I was put into the system, And I started getting the basic services. Didn't know I had to, in order to get the other services, I had to get the assessment and all that. So I'm in the process of doing that. But even then, I'm getting food, I'm getting clothing, I'm staying in a place that keeps me off the streets from 10:30 to about 5:30 in the evening. On Wednesdays it opens at 12, but even that amount of time, it helps a lot. It helps me situate myself, figure out where I'm going, and it gives me people to talk to, people my age. It helps with the fact that if you're on the streets, one of the best things you can do is build bridges with other people, people your age or people you know who can possibly help you. It's the fact that they are out there, but nobody really knows about them. That is kind of a worrying.
How's the Youth for Justice program worked out for you? I've been coming 2-3 weeks now. How's that helped you?
I've been coming to Youth for Justice, as you asked, for about 2 or 3 weeks. It's only actually on Wednesdays big time because I think it's you who actually puts on the event afterwards. It's 5 to 10. But it keeps people like me off the streets keeps us off the streets a lot for a little while longer, and actually helps us get to know each other, and helps us learn more about how places we can go to get help, places here in town where you can go, you can get water, maybe some gear and all that for if you're crashing on the streets. But it also gives us time to have fun, get to know each other, mess around. It's upsetting that it doesn't happen as often as a lot of us could hope for, because a lot of us, we're fresh on the streets and we need as help. We need as much help as we can as soon as we can. That's the thing about the streets, is you learn or you don't. But the 6th Street and the Youth for Justice Center, they are right next to each other, and they're kind of in, I don't know how to say it, cahoots? They're like in joint working?
Well, you know, since I'm the one that does that liaisonship, it's kind of like a working relationship, you know. You know, we go over there, some of the youth have release forms signed and, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, we kind of collaborated that, you know, arm's length, or unless there's a release form so that the youth have said it's okay to talk to you. But it's been a real blessing to be able to do that. We've been doing the Wednesday program's been going since May of 2015. And we call it Youth Night at the Chico Peterson Justice Center. That's been going since the first middle of July is basically when we started, 1st of July, middle of July. So maybe one quick question to ask you, Jay, is given us a nice insight on the backstory and what this first month on the streets has been like. But I mean, maybe if you could give us a 30-second recap of what you really, really need right now. What do you think are the most important things that if you could get help with that, one or two things right now could make a big, big difference in your life?
One or two, possibly three things that could help me in my life is, first off, I'd have to say a good, solid permanent residence, even if it's temporary for my wait time here in Chico, waiting on the Sacramento project. A temporary job for them, maybe even one to go longer than I expect. And probably help with the daily necessities, like food, water, the bills and all that. But it's honestly, yeah, people do bad rap the street, living on the street, but sometimes it's the street that gives you the wake-up call you need.
Thank you, Jay, for this interview today, and look forward to having you more at Youth for Justice.